Zimmerman's got it. That's a double play. It's going to be a triple play.
Unbelievable. This could be a double play, if not a triple play. It is.
3 outs. 1 swing of the bat.
And around the horn they go.
Jones, Tavares, to Galarraga.
How about that for getting out of a jam?
Third, second, yes. Triple play.
How about that?
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to our latest episode of the Triple Play Podcast. I am your host, Wyatt Street, joined, as always, by my incredible co-host. Guys, introduce yourselves.
Josh Spider-Tack Attack Strickland.
Bradley Rosin and Sunscreen, I guess? Kendall.
I like it. Josh is finally back with us. He unfortunately got caught with sticky stuff while editing. Served the 10-game suspension for sticky keys.
Nice. So. Good job. Are you proud of yourself?
Thank you.
Are you proud of yourself?
Very proud of myself. And that's our Triple Play Podcast episode, everybody.
Oh, that's it. Wow.
I mean, that sums up what we're going to talk about, so...
Yes. In case you haven't gathered from our plethora of jokes, we are talking about MLB's sticky stuff problem. Because all of this has really started to just hit the fan here within the last couple weeks. And needless to say, it's been a hot mess for Major League Baseball. Dare I say, they have found themselves in a sticky situation.
I might log off.
We're just going to keep doing this? Yeah. Why? You might be doing this podcast on your own.
I don't think you'd mind that.
Okay, and I can do it. Think I can't talk for an hour and a half about baseball?
Are you going to edit it yourself too, or?
You know, not as well as you.
We could just decide to be silent and see what Wyatt does with himself.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
Talking about leaving about the dry. We don't need dry and sticky.
Speaking of which, though, let's get sticky, fellas. So let's just jump right into it.
You're really stuck on this, huh?
I was about
this
to,
is the whole podcast. It's just going to be puns. We're not actually going to get into the topic.
I was about to assure everybody that the jokes are about to dwindle a little bit, but I suppose not. But let's get right into it, though. The MLB's had a sticky stuff problem for a while now. It's everybody's been talking about how. Everybody keeps saying your favorite pitcher is using it. Your favorite pitcher is using it. That's kind of been the thing that so many people keep saying. They said before the season that they sent a memo to all teams, like, we're going to start checking the baseballs. You know, we're not cracking down per se, but we're going to start looking and seeing, like, how prevalent is this issue? Well, it seems apparently that they have found that a significant portion of pitchers are using something that is not allowed within the rules, and there's been more of a discussion about things. So Major League Baseball decided to just crack down mid-season. I think that's the emphatic point here, mid-season, that is pissing a lot of people off. We'll get into that in a minute. The crackdown starts officially Monday, June 21st. The new memo, the new guidelines that have been sent out, umpires are to check pitchers between innings or during pitching changes so as to not delay games, which, you know, fair enough. Starters are to receive one mandatory check per game. Relievers are to be checked at the end of the inning they entered or when they are removed from the game, whichever comes first. If someone is found to be using some kind of foreign substance, they are immediately ejected and suspended 10 games. And the umpires are the sole authority on the decision of whether or not a pitcher has broken the rules, whether he's using a foreign substance or not. There's also a lot of little intricacies within the rules, such as if a position player is found to be using a foreign substance in the aid of a pitcher, actually, or the catcher is catchers can be periodically checked as well, because if they are found to be putting something on the ball for the pitcher, they can be ejected for this as well. So it's not just pitchers, but it's something that 99% of the time is just pitchers. But before we go a little deeper into this, let's talk about the crackdown itself. guys, just what do you make of this sudden crackdown? I know a lot of people are upset. We'll get into that in a little bit later, that it's happening mid-season after being told one thing. Do you think this is a knee-jerk reaction? Is it too much? Or do you think that they're going on the right track here? Josh, I'll have you start us off.
I think it's knee-jerk just in the fact that they just kind of all of a sudden did it. Like, I think they were a little too quick on the draw here. They kind of needed, like, something needed to be done. Because this has just been a rampant issue, like, the whole season. Like, this has been an issue this season. It was an issue last year. It's pretty much been in the public eye since Trevor Bauer first mentioned it, like, a couple years ago. So, I mean, everybody knows it's going on. And some people are okay with it. Some people are not. I mean, but, like, it is technically cheating. Like, you can't have a foreign substance on the ball. Like, that's just, you can't do that. So, it makes sense for the MLB to crack down on it. However, I do understand that they've kind of done it a little too quick here, because they just kind of made everybody quit cold turkey and stuff like that. But then again, they've had this whole trial period going on during the whole beginning of the season, like this little experiment thing that they've been doing for the beginning of the season. So I see that as more of hey, we're going to crack down on this eventually, so this is your time to kind of wean off of it. And some guys just never did.
I'm surprised it's taking this long. I think this is long overdue for baseball. It is kind of funny how long, you know, these stretches of cheating scandals go on for with the steroid era. Now we got the sticky situation era. That's what I'm going to call it. It goes on for so long, and we've seen guys, I mean, use stuff for years. I mean, this has gone on for decades, and I think baseball nowadays is just starting to kind of, like you said, overreact. And I think, in a way, Rob Manfred, this is just a testament to how sort of, I guess, under pressure he gets. It doesn't really seem like he's the one that's kind of dictating everything. It sounds like there's people below him that are pressuring him to do this because it would make baseball look better, but it ends up making baseball look worse. So I think the way that they did this is probably not a very good idea, especially from the players' perspective. I mean, we'll get into some of the reactions that the players have had, but I think just it did seem like it was all of a sudden, and we all knew this was kind of an issue, you know, years ago, but it is kind of weird timing that now it's starting to become more of a thing. I think it's right for baseball to do it. I mean, you're right. It is cheating. It's technically, you know, like any other form of cheating in baseball. We've already had the cheating scandals with the Astros, and maybe that's why this is suddenly becoming a thing, because we saw the cheating scandal go on with, you know, using video and using different forms of surveillance to spy on teams, and now you've got this. So I think baseball is just trying to come clean, but we all know that's never really going to ever happen. There's ways around it, and it is kind of funny how all of a sudden, you know, the players are now revolting against the league, and it seems to be a battle between both sides. So I don't know how this is going to get resolved, but I think baseball has dug itself a deeper hole by creating this whole mess.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the issue for me is not what they're doing. It's how they've gone about it. Because like you guys said, it's cheating. This is something that's been going on for a long time. It's something that they needed to do something about, obviously. You know, and I've seen like some people's arguments that, you know, oh, well, the guys who are doing just stuff for grip, not necessarily the spin rate stuff and nastier pitches, but the guys who are just trying to get better grip, like it's better for player safety because there's less hit by pitches. But the issue is actually right now, hit by pitches are at an all-time high, literally. Like, look it up. It's at an all-time high. I can't remember the numbers. And that's because what guys are doing is because they're just trying to – they're using this stuff and trying to get these nasty pitches, these spin rates, all, you know, those arc curves and stuff. Like, they're just chucking the piss out of the ball. They're not trying to locate it as well anymore because they have that sticky stuff, and that leads to more hit by pitches. And, you know, taking this away could actually help with that. So there's that point. But, yeah, I think the issue here is it's definitely a knee-jerk, in my opinion, because of how they're going about it. It's just all of a sudden they were like, okay, we're doing our crackdown now. And they didn't really give anybody any kind of warning or chance to kind of do anything. It was just kind of like, all right, here we are. And it, you know, obviously something needs to change. I like that they are cracking down. I like how they're going about it. I think, you know, having the umpires check guys, you know, I think that's a decent way of doing it, just because I can't think of anything better right now. But I think it would have been better implemented maybe in the off season, because as we'll get into in the next point here, you know, when you say one thing at the beginning of the year and say, okay, this is how we're going to do things this season, and then halfway through the season you go, actually, never mind, we're going to change now, I think that's where you start to get into some tricky situations. That's where things start to get a little weird, and that's where you can run into even more issues that could have been avoided and that are unnecessary. And that's where we're going to get into this next point now, actually, because, you know, a lot of people are furious, pitchers especially. Trevor Bauer, ever outspoken, always. He's constantly calling out Major League Baseball. He's been very vocal on this situation, particularly the point of the fact that they're doing it midseason like this, with no regard. There's been little discussions with the players. That's another point he's been making, and a lot of other people have been making, is that they're not talking to the pitchers. They're not talking to the players quite as much as they should be. And that the best way to go about things would be to try to get the player and pitcher perspective to see, like, okay, well, what can we do to help you? How can we make this a best situation? Tyler Glasnow, probably the most notable situation here, he just recently received a partially torn UCL. He's rehabbing to hopefully avoid Tommy John surgery, but he went off in a rant a few days ago because in which he said he, you know, was hearing all the talks about, okay, a crackdown might be coming very soon. So he's like, I'm going to stop cold turkey, because he said his method of choice was sunscreen and rosin just for grip. He wasn't trying to get spin rate or anything. He was just trying to get a better grip on the baseball. And so he stops cold turkey, and he was told by a doctor that might not be the best idea. He was like, no, it'll be fine. Two starts later, partially torn UCL, and his explanation was he's giving harder grip, working more muscles that he never quite used to have to work before, just so suddenly out of nowhere. And I can see where he's coming from, how that stress can then, that extra stress suddenly on your arm with no build into it, just out of nowhere, complete 180, I can see that. So, you know, he goes off on this rant, and basically his gist is the mid-season crackdown as opposed to giving guys time to adjust. And his argument now is that other guys might face the same problem he's facing, getting suddenly injured because of this. Do you think he's got a good point, guys? Do you think he's out of line here? Is there anything you agree / disagree with him? Are you in full, you know, like, what are your thoughts on this Glasnow rant? Bradley, you're the one who actually brought this up to me, who put it in our group chat. I'll have you start us off here.
First off, Glasnow's an idiot. I think the way that he approached this was horrible. you're telling me that I'm supposed to have sympathy for you because you're cheating? Get out of here. No. I don't buy it one bit. Now, first off, he should never have come out to begin with, because multiple reasons. One, rosin's allowed and sunscreen's allowed. That's never been a question. There's a rosin bag behind the freaking mound. And you can wear sunscreen on the field. Like, I'm surprised he came out when he did. And two, I'm not no medical professional, but there is no chance that he tore his UCL from one start not having grip on the ball. That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. You're telling me that 90 pitches later, a guy that's had arm problems in the past, you're going to blame the fact that you had less of a grip on the ball? You throw 98 and you have been lacking control for a long time. That probably leads to more risk of an injury. It's not the fact you had a less of a grip on the ball. The ball's already sucked to begin with. He the way that he approached this was idiotic. And I think, yes, I would like to see MLB, you know, his point about the balls not being great, they're being chalky. I think that would be great for them to have better grip. I think that alone might solve a lot of the issues that, you know, these players have with just not being able to grip the ball better. Baseballs for centuries have had techniques on how to, you know, create a better feel on the ball so the pitchers don't feel like they're just throwing a, you know, slippery stone. They've done this for years. They don't need foreign substances to make that happen. Now, if guys are doing it to get better spin rates, yes, that's not allowed. But I do agree that there should be a way that baseball can alter these balls, but not at the expense of the pitchers. But the fact that he felt the need to come out and say anything, he was never going to get caught. You can use those two substances, and that's totally okay. I mean, what are you going to tell a guy? You can't apply sunscreen to your face mid-inning? Like, what are you supposed to say about that? So, yeah, I think Glasnow is an idiot for saying this. I don't understand. I mean, again, he had arm problems when he was with the Pirates, and now it's a no-brainer why he's pitching so well, because clearly he was not using anything in Pittsburgh, and now he is.
Granted, but, I don't think anybody's using anything in Pittsburgh.
And they should be, but they're not. And that's just that's the inherent issue with the Pittsburgh Pirates. But, yeah, Bauer, I think, is definitely using something. I mean, we've seen the videos he's posted just kind of toying with baseball recently. But Glasnow, you never should have come out and said anything. And get out of here with that medical excuse. There's no way that caused your arm injury.
It's just a very interesting situation just overall because, like Bradley said, who's going to show sympathy to guys who straight up say they're not cheating? I mean, come on. Like, am I supposed to feel bad for Gerrit Cole after his terrible press conference?
That was awful.
Like, no, I don't feel bad for him at all. I don't feel bad for him at all. And he still came out and had a great start right after. So, I mean, you know, I understand getting a better grip on the ball. And one of the things that probably need to happen is change the actual baseball and make it a little grippier for pitchers. I don't know how that's going to affect hitting, of course, because every tiny little thing you do to a baseball affects hitting in a major way for some reason. But that's one way to fix it. And like you said, they're not going to ban rosin and sunscreen because rosin, there's rosin bags, like you said. And you think the MLB is going to ban sunscreen for a sport where you play outside every single day? Come on.
Well,
I don't know how you would monitor
that. Like, seriously, I don't know how an umpire would catch that if you're applying sunscreen to your hands and rosin to your hands. Like, that's never going to get monitored, so I don't know why you felt the need to stop. That's your fault.
That's more of a health hazard because all your players could get skin cancer now. I mean, what? Like, that's absurd. But, yeah, I'm not going to feel bad for these guys. I mean, they gave you kind of a period to where, hey, we're going to crack down on this soon. Like they had the warning signs. He didn't take it, and then he just went cold turkey, and he may or may not have messed up his arm because of it. I mean, I'm not going to feel bad. I feel bad for the injury, but I don't feel bad for him not having to use substance.
And that's where I almost kind of, I don't know if I like the way that MLB did it, but I almost appreciate the fact that they didn't like give them a whole offseason to figure it out. Because these players have been cheating for years, and in a way, I don't want them to get injured, but in a way, I'm kind of glad some of them are getting exposed now, because they kind of deserve it. Like, you've been cheating, I can't feel bad for you that it happened in the middle of the year. Like, if you gave them 4 months to figure it out, there's got to be someone out there that would come up with this technique to be able to use that's not going to get caught. I mean, they do this with steroids all the time. But in a way, I'm like, all right, well, they gave you a warning, and now they just ripped it. Suck it up and pitch. He struck out 11 guys his first start. Like, Glasnow was not affected.
I think the thing for me is that it's barely a warning in the sense that they were just like, we're going to monitor the balls, but we're not doing anything about it. And that, to me, was them telling the pitchers, keep doing what you're doing with caution, sure, but we're not necessarily doing anything to you for using this stuff. We're just seeing if you're using it. And I don't feel bad about the guys getting caught. I don't feel bad about them getting exposed, obviously, because cheating is cheating and should be cracked down upon. I think the issue with it for me is when you say one thing before the season and then you really just 180 out of nowhere. I think that's the issue for me, is saying one thing and then doing something else. I think when you say before the season, this is how we're going to do things for 2021, the whole season is the implication there. We're doing this season. I think it's not right or fair to then switch immediately for no reason, or not no reason, but to out of nowhere per se. Like, there wasn't necessarily an emergency. There wasn't necessarily something crazy out of nowhere. It's like they just found what everyone knew. Oh, everyone's using this. Well, shoot. Let's do something. When? Now? Okay, I guess. So I just feel like it would have been better suited, like, sticking to the original plan. Necessarily, as far as like whether or not Glasnow's injury came from this, I don't know. I'm not a doctor, I can't say. I mean, the way he explained it made sense, but granted, it could have just been a happenstance, it could have been coincidence. There's really no way to know. But to be fair, I don't like, obviously, the injury is terrible. I don't feel bad that he got exposed for cheating. I don't feel bad that anybody's getting exposed for cheating, but clearly the fact that all of this conversation is happening implies that there is a major issue here because of the cheating. And I think also the way that Major League Baseball has implemented everything has just not been the smoothest of rollouts, obviously. And that in of itself is also a problem, because when it seems like in the Manfred era, whenever they've tried to do something that's meant to be good for the game, they somehow still find a way to mess it up. And this is a prime example.
And interestingly enough, all the developments that the baseball scene over the last years with analytics is kind of coming back to get the players. Because you see the number of statistics now that we have, and the analytics and the RPMs and ways to track spin rate. We've seen that be, you know, used well the last few years for, you know, recruiting and scouting and just, you know, analyzing players and how they pitch. But now you can see a striking difference since when they implemented this and then when they're beforehand. And look at the difference between like Trevor Bauer and Gerrit Cole. I mean, their RPMs, I sound like a pretty big nerd right now, but their RPMs were like so much worse. And if that's not a dead giveaway, I mean, sure, they could not be spinning the ball as well on a given day. But if it happens consistently, you're going to be able to figure out real quick who is using who.
Yeah. And I think to the point of the spin rate and nerd stuff, I'm going to shout out my media relations co-intern here, Spencer Peltz. He actually doing a great thesis on Trevor Bauer's descent with Major League Baseball, and he showed me a clip from one of his videos the other day back from last season, 2019, you know, his Cy Young season, where he at the end reads tweets of he read some tweets from people, and one guy pointed out like Bauer's average spin rate from the previous year was like 2400 or something like that. And his lowest spin rate during last season was like 26 or something like that. It was like higher than his average from the previous season, his lowest was. And he was just like, a lot of people are big mad about this. It's just interesting. He basically said he was using stuff without actually admitting he was using stuff. His point was like, just to show how easy it was and how no one did anything because no one either noticed or no one cared at the time anyway. So it's interesting to point that out. And to the points that you guys made of the ball, I agree 100%. Like, they need – whatever they did to the ball this year obviously hasn't helped in a lot of ways. But supposedly there is the intent, or they are working on trying to create a different ball that is a little tackier. Something similar to the ball the KBO actually uses. My boss with the drive, actually, he has a KBO ball that he showed to me like a couple weeks ago, that it's really tacky. Like, when you are holding that thing, there's a lot of grip. It is sticky. That ball is sticky. I don't know what they do to it, what's on it, or how they make it, but that ball is sticky, and it gives pitchers grip. And it's not like super sticky. It's not like those pictures you see with the guys with the spider tack where it's just hanging, dangling off of their hand. But it's got a decent amount of grip. It's almost like, you know, say like you're wearing wide receiver gloves or something, right? Like, it just gives you a little bit of extra grip. And I think if they are able to develop a ball that's similar to that, that has some kind of extra grip, I think that would definitely help and theoretically should resolve this issue, right? For the guys who just want grip. And then obviously the guys who are trying to get that extra spin rate, well, they're faced with two options, either get better or keep cheating and suffer the potential consequences.
I think batters would, if we can get all on a universal page here where everything's equal and there's nobody that's getting a huge advantage, I think people are going to be okay with that. You know, even if it does provide better grip and, you know, resumes their spin rates, I think batters are going to be okay with that because they're not going to get hit. Pitchers are going to be happy with that. And teams will too. I mean, shoot, the Dodgers had to be pretty scared when they saw Trevor Bauer's spin rate go down, and they just boatloaded a ton of money over to him, or Gerrit Cole with the Yankees. Like, that's got to scare somebody.
Yeah, so definitely a really interesting situation Major League Baseball's got going on here. So this next week, the crackdown will begin. Umpires are going to start doing their checks of basically every pitcher in the entire sport. So we're going to see what actually happens, and it's going to be interesting because I'm curious to see who's going to be the first guy to get pegged with this, and who's going to try to say, you know what, I'll be able to get past the check, I'll be fine, and not actually be fine. So, and also the guys, you know, basically everyone who's using it now having to stop. How are they going to adjust? What's going to happen? And which guys that have been performing well for the past year or two, or even just this year, whose performances suddenly, mysteriously, quote-unquote, take a staggering dip? That's going to be fun to watch as well. So, interesting times ahead for Major League Baseball. I don't know how this is going to play out, but maybe next podcast we'll have some interesting content from this.
Yeah, and the funniest part out of all of this is this 10-game suspension is literally a paid vacation.
Yeah, because it is paid. Somehow.
And if you're a pitcher, that's what?
If you're if you're a starting pitcher, yeah, it's probably going to work out to like two starts at most.
If you're in a six-man rotation,
if you're
that's
a relief pitcher, I mean.
So you get a, you get to rest your arm, you get paid.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally just like a rain out. That's not a big deal.
Yeah, so interesting times ahead, but we're going to move on now. That was a big first half of the episode, but it's time now for the ad break and our fantasy fifth via Tom. So let's all take a moment to relax after this big sticky situation and just enjoy some advertisements and fantasy baseball. We'll be back in a moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Tom Cotier, and this is the Fantasy Fifth. In our first Week 11 matchup, 100% Capacity defeated Castellanos' Drive 298-277. 100% Capacity, two-way sensation Shohei Ohtani led the way with 38 points thanks to 6 home runs for the week. Meanwhile, for Castellanos' Drive, two-hit Whit Merrifield led the way with 12 hits on the week, including a home run for 4 RBIs. That was good for a total of 31 points. In our other Week 11 matchup, the Fighting Buck Farmers defeated the Betterman Babers 383-338. For the Fighting Buck Farmers, Jose Altuve led the way with 35 points thanks to 4 home runs and 9 RBIs, while Lil Yaz Mikey Yastrzemski led the way for the Betterman Babers. He had 39 points with 3 home runs and 11 RBIs on the week. After Week 11, the Fighting Buck Farmers are at the top of the standings with a 9-2 record. They have a 4-game advantage on the two teams behind, as 100% Capacity and Castellanos' Drive sit at 5-6. Meanwhile, the Betterman Babers bring up the bottom of the standings at 3-8. That'll do it for this week at the Fantasy Fifth. As always, I'm Tom Cloutier, and back to you guys in your respective apartments.
All right, we are back. Thank you to Tom for our Fantasy Fifth update there. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Tom, for really being the glue that keeps this podcast together.
Dang it, Josh, you beat me to it.
They just keep coming.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, fantasy has been fun, y'all.
It's been a good time.
Enjoyed it.
It's been a really good time. You know,
Mike Trout being out has really killed me. So,
Josh, I'm fighting so hard to try to beat you this week, man. I'm up 26, and I'm trying to hold you off. I think my batting got negative points yesterday.
Oof.
Now to get that. Well, 7. No, I got 18 points. Never mind. I was at negative at like 9:30.
It sucks not having enough IL space, because I have 3 IL spots and 4 players on the IL, one of which is all 4 of which I don't want to drop. So it's.
Oh, you just hate to see
it. It sucks when you're stuck with a player that you can't get rid of.
Which is about half our players because we drafted with only 4 people.
What are we supposed to do? But we've been talking about pitching so much. Let's talk about it a little bit more, but let's move on to a guy who I think definitely isn't using anything because why does he need to? Jacob DeGrom. It's been a very great year for him. I mean, he's on pace to set some records and have arguably one of the best pitching seasons ever. However, one thing that's getting in the way of that is the fact that he's had a lot of minor injury troubles throughout the course of the entire season. Let's just run through some of these real quick, okay? He left his last start versus the Cubs after 3 innings. Before which he got 8 strikeouts and an RBI at the plate. So he was doing pretty darn well. But 3 innings pitched, leaves with shoulder soreness. This is the 3rd time this year he's been pulled from a start due to some injury concerns. And he has also missed 3 other starts. On May 4th, scratched from a start because of right side tightness. May 9th, he left after 5 innings versus Arizona with right side tightness again. And then subsequently missed 2 starts. And then June 11th left after six innings versus San Diego with flexor tendonitis. So three different issues here, all of which are minor, but still it's believed to be three separate things. But still here, test comeback negative, good news. It's believed he's going to be all right. I guess the outlook is that at most he misses one start, but there's belief that he could still make his next scheduled start. So I don't know. The fact that he's had so many little things, eventually these little things can add up and become nagging things. Guys, how concerned are you over these little constant injuries from DeGrom? Josh, I'll send it to you first.
Well, it's definitely concerning, no doubt, because you don't want a pitcher of this caliber, best pitcher on your team, to be injured pretty much every single game. Like, you have all the missed starts that he's had. He only played like three innings like twice in a row now or something like that. You don't want that out of your ace pitcher. And nobody wants that because everybody loves watching Jacob DeGrom. I love watching Jacob DeGrom strike out all of the Braves. I really have to start thinking, could this be the issue with him throwing way harder than he usually does? Because he's hitting 100 multiple times during games now. So I'm not sure if he just needs to kind of dial it back a little bit or something like that. Like maybe he's just testing the human body at this moment in time, and it's just not working out.
Yeah, I would be more concerned if we did not have a shortened season last year. I think because of overuse, he's had a ton of use the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, he's been at the top, like you said, he's been throwing real hard, and he's pitched a lot. But I think the fact that we had a shortened year last year, I think you were going to see this with a lot of guys anyway, the first couple months. I mean, it does take time to get back into midseason form. And for someone that's at the top of their game like that, you know, you have little things pop up like this. I think, too, the Mets are extremely cautious with him. If this was a normal guy, you know, middle of the rotation, not a really big name, I'd be more concerned if he had all these nagging injuries. But I think it kind of reminds me of Christian McCaffrey, where he had like, and he was out for like a whole year, so different story. But he had all these little nagging injuries that kept popping up like everywhere around his body. And every single time the Panthers were just very cautious. And we're like, you know what? We're not going to play you. I think that's what the Mets are doing here. And they've probably told Jacob DeGrom, hey, listen, if you get anything, no matter what it is, play the caution card and really try to be careful, because the last thing they want to do is overuse him, work him into the ninth in a 10-0 game, and have him blow his arm out and they miss the whole season. Because the Mets now are competitive. Like, they're leading the division. They've got everything to play for now. And everything so far has come back okay. So I would say, unless there's something like really scary, like the flexor tendonitis was probably the most scariest one, because that never sounds good with an arm. But like right side tightness, I think every now and then it's good for him to probably get that rest. And in the long run, honestly, not having pitched that much will end up helping him this year. So I think he's going to be okay, and it might end up being the best thing for him come like September, October.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. It's at the end there. I mean, how he could be a little more rested than other guys, especially come playoff time. But and that's, I agree. Like, he's your best. He's the best player on your team. He's the best pitcher in baseball, and arguably one of the best players, full stop, in the entire game. Like, if you're the Mets, you definitely don't want to force the issue unnecessarily, right? Like, why force him back out there, risk further injury in a middle of June game, you know, when you want him at full strength come the playoff push, come October, when you could be squaring off against the Dodgers or Padres or something like that. So that's a great point that I completely agree, for sure, because you definitely want to be cautious with a guy like this. I think obviously the fact that he's been scratched from starts, keeps leaving early with minor things, like, you know, it's a little concerning. It definitely forces you to be a lot more cautious. But the fact that each time it's something minor definitely makes me feel a little bit better about it. It's a little worrisome, but each time he seems to be fine. Each time he comes back and his lights out. So I think he's going to be okay. I think everything's going to be fine. There's been no reason for significant concern to this point with any tests or anything. Nobody's come out and said, like, oh, we got to be careful about the Grom. Like, no one's voiced any concern. And obviously, major concern they might try to keep under wraps within the org. But, you know, still, like, nobody's come out and said anything concerning. Every prognosis, everything I've been seeing is that he's fine. So I'm going to believe he's going to be fine. But it's definitely something we're going to keep an extra eye on him. Just because, like, okay, he's going to go out and dominate, but what if he tweaks something? What if he pulls something? And now that's also that's the only issue now with DeGrom is, like, everybody, all eyes are on him whenever he takes the mound because we want to see what he's going to do to the opposing team, how he's going to massacre them tonight. But the other worry in the back of our minds every time he pitches now is tonight another night he leaves after three? Is tonight another night he doesn't make it past five because he gets pulled for something random? And that in of itself is a little worrisome, but thankfully nothing major to this point. So that, knock on wood, is a good sign.
And it could just come down to being cautious. Like, it could just be like, I felt something weird, and then they took him out of the game just to be cautious because you don't want to be without Jacob DeGrom. But you guys want to hear a crazy stat about Jacob DeGrom? Which every stat about Jacob DeGrom is crazy, but this one I really like.
Yes.
So as of yesterday, Jacob DeGrom has had the same number of MRIs this season as earned runs he's given up. He's had four
nuts.
MRIs. So I'm not really sure. I mean, that's an amazing stat, but also why he's had four MRIs so far.
What's his RBI? Oh, hold on. He's got more RBIs. He's got six RBIs, four MRIs.
I saw someone a couple weeks ago. I don't know if I mentioned this in our last show or not, but about the ERA plus. Did y'all see that stat?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the ERA plus was like, for the average player, is like 100. His was like over 600.
Oh yeah, it's insane.
It's ridiculous.
Absolutely absurd. Yeah. Speaking of another guy who's just insane in everything that he does, guys, we have our first announced home run derby participant, and I am absolutely hysterically excited to watch this man compete. The Japanese Babe Ruth himself, Shohei Ohtani, the first man to commit to the home run derby this year, which I want to remind everyone is in Coors Field. So, that being said, guys, how excited are you to see this? We don't even know who the other seven guys in this thing are, but I don't even care. This is the one that's going to get all eyes on this show. Bradley, start us off. How excited are you for this? Which I also want to point out, too, before we jump in, Shohei is going to be the first guy to participate in the Home Run Derby in the same season in which he pitched.
Wow. Of course. Of course he is. Who else would it be? I'm excited. The fact it's in Coors, I think, even makes it more compelling to see what he can really do. I think this is tremendous for him from a marketing standpoint. I think baseball needs this because, again, we've talked in the past how, compared to how another guy might be, I mean, they market him, but they could do a better job. So I think this is great for baseball, great for him. It's awesome that he's not backing away from this because it's tempting sometimes for guys that are doing super well or really on a hot streak to not do it so they don't mess their swing up. But he's got that kind of swing where I feel like he'd be okay. Second point, Josh, I'm really sorry that this is not going to be happening in Atlanta, man, because Shohei in Atlanta, I think you'd pay whatever they want for a ticket to go see that.
My tolerance for how expensive the ticket would be would go, like, I would be willing to pay a lot.
Oh, I'm sure you would, yeah. But I think this is going to be great, and I hope other guys, other big-name guys come join him, because as we've seen with the dunk contest, big names really draw crowds, and the dunk contest in the NBA doesn't anymore. So I hope baseball gets a lot more players that everyone knows besides just Shohei.
So I'm going to give you my excitement through a fun stat. I have all the fun stats for you guys today. So Shohei Ohtani, this is his last week. All right. So June 15th, he hit a home run in the game. June 16th, he hit a home run in that game. June 17th, he pitched six innings and only gave up one earned run. And then June 18th, he hit two home runs in a game. He's insane. It's amazing. My favorite part about Shohei Ohtani being in the home run derby is that you've seen him hit any kind of home run. Like, I've seen him hit just straight lasers that could kill a person if it hit him in the face. I've seen him hit just absolute bombs that go 450 feet away. And I mean,
all right, wait, now Josh, to be fair,
450 yards.
I think any MLB player's hit, if it hits someone in the face, would probably kill them, but I'll give you that.
That is fair.
It's just, I think, like, to Josh's credit, it's the lasers he's talking about, they look extra hard compared to the average player.
Okay, we'll give him that.
Yeah.
But what I mean is, Shohei Ohtani has proven to hit pretty much any kind of home run you need. You need opposite field, he's got it. He can hit it at anywhere in the field. It's going to be amazing to watch him in the home run derby, because I think he's good enough to just toy with everybody. Like, he might make it close just for fun.
You know, and actually, to that point, Josh, he's a goofy, fun guy. Like, you just see him interact. Like, even in his introductory press conference, one of the first introductions the American baseball audience gets to this guy is someone in the press conference asking him what number he wanted, or asking him about his number choice. And him saying, jokingly, I wanted 27, but someone else already had it. And it's just a funny, like, he's just a goofy guy who loves to play the game and have fun. And you're right, he's good enough to just absolutely screw with everybody and say, I only need to hit X home runs this round? Okay, I'm going to save that last one until a second left just to be funny. Like,
so now, to that point, I want him to go first.
Ooh.
Well, I'm curious though, but what's your pick? Are you taking Shohei or the field?
Well, I think you already know my answer to that.
Well, I mean, realistically, there's seven other guys.
There's seven other guys. Statistically speaking, your best bet is the field.
It depends. It depends who else is in the field, of course. Because like Vlad Jr., Tatis, and Acuna, then that's kind of difficult just to go with Ohtani.
Especially knowing, you know, if Vladito is in it, like. We've already seen what he can do in the home run derby. We've already seen, like, he's the kind of guy who is built for a home run derby. Like, we remember that epic battle he had with Pete, you know, that amazing derby he had against Alonso that he ultimately lost. But then before that, the friggin' Peterson duel that he had in that derby, like, that was just absolutely amazing. He hit, like, 90-something home runs in that home run derby. That's what? It's absurd. So he's obviously the kind of guy who could give Shohei a run for his money. But if there's anybody who could give Vladdy a run for his money, it would be Shohei, because we've seen what he does with balls that are having absolutely crazy curves and drops and pitches that are going almost 100 miles an hour, and how he just sends those 425 feet with an exit velo of 105 miles an hour with little to no effort, doesn't even barely break a sweat. What's he going to do with a pitch that's lobbed in there designed for him to just say, yeet, like... I'm excited for that. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm tempted to take the field, but you're right. It really does depend on who's going to be in it. But home run derby is fun, man. Anything could happen. I mean, Shohei could be there. He's still going to draw a big crowd. He might not do well, but I think he will, and I expect him to.
Yeah, and I think Shohei being the first one to sign up for it actually could help pull more bigger names into it. Like, some guys obviously are always a little hesitant to jump into the home run derby because they provide the, like, it can mess up my swing argument. And here we have Shohei, who's just like, I don't care. I'm gonna hit. People want to see me hit home runs, so, you know, I'll do it. And
I don't think it's possible to mess up that beautiful man's swing.
No, I don't think it is either. But it's, I think a guy like Shohei coming in actually could pull bigger names who might have been previously more hesitant, just because athletes inherently are competitive, especially at the highest level in their sport. And I think guys who would have previously been more hesitant might want to, you know, say, man, I really want to go toe-to-toe with Shohei. You know, especially guys in the National League who don't get to play against him normally. Like, they're gonna be more willing to maybe jump in and say, like, this is my one chance to really go toe-to-toe with Shohei. I kind of want to do that. You know, and this could be me just speaking through hope, but I would love to see that. Like, those guys who might have said no previously, I'd like to think the pull of Shohei, the Shohei effect, as I'll dub it, could bring more guys into it, you know. And let's hope it does. But, I mean, you got to think Vladdy would probably want to jump in, who's currently tied for the league lead in home runs at 22. Fernando Tatis Jr. would hopefully be a guy who'd jump in. Shohei's currently sitting behind those guys at 21. Like, he's up there, you know. Which, by the way, I just want to point out, I didn't even realize Salvador Perez is in the top five in Major League Baseball in home runs at 18.
Freaking Salvador Perez, he always comes up.
He's just there. He is. He's just there.
Fantasy team, baby, let's go.
But, like, you know, you look at, like, the top eight, right? If the Home Run Derby is the top eight, you have Vladdy, Tatis, Otani, Matt Olson, Salvador Perez, Ronald Acuna Jr., and then there's three tied for the next one, so it's hard to tell. But you pick two out of Winker, Devers, and Adolis Garcia. Like, that's a pretty solid derby in of itself, and obviously it's not going to be those eight guys, but, like, you know, you could always see Judge or Stanton. You could see, you know, guys like that come in. So, I mean, we know what they can do in a home run derby. So, like, this derby in of itself, just pure talent-wise, has the potential to be one of the best ever, especially adding in the Coors effect. I'm pumped. But that being said, that's basically all we've got for you today. But one last thing, as always, before we leave, we got to turn our triple play. Josh, I'll send it to you for out one first. Why don't you start us off here?
Well, I'm going to start off on a very sad note because we have to talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks at some point.
Dang it, you stole mine.
You stole mine too?
Oh, wow. Okay, so we were going to talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks.
All right, everybody adjust.
I'm not sure if mine is going to be exactly the same as y'all's, but I don't know. But yeah, they've lost 15 in a row. They have like they've lost 24 straight road games or whatever. But they are one of the worst teams in the league. But for some reason, they have scored more runs than the New York Yankees.
Gosh.
Don't know how that works, but yeah, there you go.
All right, that's impressive, actually. I don't think their run differential is the worst in baseball either, so that would make sense.
The run differential is negative 100, by the way.
I think the Pirates are at 99. We just won by one yesterday, so we're in second to last.
There you go.
My triple play, it's going to be baseball related, but not MLB related. I want to give a shout out to NC State's baseball team.
Ooh,
how
yes.
about making the freaking College World Series? And if anybody saw the College Baseball Hub Insta page, they took a screenshot of the March 29th ACC standings. And sure enough, dead last in the Coastal and the Atlantic were Virginia and NC State. And look where we are now. Look what two teams made the College World Series. It's exciting, man. I think for college baseball, it almost seems like this year, just with the return of sports and getting things back and how crazy it was just seeing some of these teams make a run. I think college baseball got a lot more coverage this year than they have in the past. And ESPN's done a good job about covering most of these games. And it's nice to be able to watch some of them during work hours too. But I'm excited, man. College World Series starts today. Eight really, really good teams. And it'll be interesting. It's a lot of different teams, which I think is really fun. And they're not all SEC teams either. So shout out to State, though.
Yeah, and that speaks to the beauty of college baseball and baseball in general, how, like, this is the sport more than any other sport where literally anything can happen. Anybody can beat anybody on any given day. Like, you tell people Coastal Carolina is a former champion of this sport, people are like, what? You don't follow it. You know, like, nope. You look at on paper, there's no reason NC State should have ever competed with Arkansas.
The Omahogs.
Yeah, that's what threw me off. I was thinking Omahogs. No, but like, they, especially seeing game one of that series, 21-2 was the final score. Arkansas obliterated them. And then NC State won the next two games by like one run each.
That was the largest first game deficit, or I guess first game loss, that any winning team from a series to go to the College World Series has ever faced and overcome.
It's absolutely absurd. I wanted to for mine though, in lieu of the Diamondbacks, before I want to say the Orioles had like a 19 game road losing streak as well. Like, they haven't won on the road since John Means no hitter, but no one is talking about it because the Diamondbacks are just so much worse.
Which, actually, fun fact, I don't know if this is your triple play or not, but...
No, my triple play is now the Orioles.
Oh, well, the Diamondbacks haven't won a road game since that seven-inning no-hitter that Bumgarner pitched.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Wow. So, since the soon-to-be former Diamondback pitched his seven-inning no-hitter. Because you know they're trading the entire team.
I mean, they have to, except for Ketel Marte. Is that how you say his name?
Ketel Marte. Wyatt?
Ketel, yeah, Ketel Marte. Oh, I don't know why I'm so bad at names. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah. Also on today's edition of, oh, he plays for that team, Matt Harvey, Baltimore Oriole.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I just happened to see it when I Googled the Orioles.
I was talking to a buddy of mine at work the other day, and he went to high school in the same area that Dustin Ackley played, and he was talking about just how ridiculous he was in high school, and I was like, oh my, I forgot that guy even existed. he's not in the league anymore, which would be the perfect who does he play for now, unfortunately, but what a throwback.
Yeah, and I, you know, you bring up the College World Series, actually. Real quick, just rapid fire before we get out of here, guys. I want picks. Let's who's winning this thing?
Ooh, all right. Hold on, let me pull this bracket.
Yeah, I need to do that, too. Can't just hit us with that, come on.
Yeah, on the fly, good thing I can type fast.
It's gonna be fair. Okay, so the matchups, we keep in mind, one half of the bracket, I think, hold on, let me get the actual bracket. I want the matchups lined up perfectly. We need it exactly correct. Okay. Bracket 1, Vanderbilt, Arizona, Stanford, NC State. Bracket 2, Texas, Tennessee, Mississippi State, and Virginia.
Wow. I really want to take Vanderbilt. I think they're probably going to win it. But I think my pick on both sides, I'm going to take Stanford. Ooh. And I'm going to take Mississippi State. I think Stanford has had, they've been dominant. I mean, they absolutely blitzed their regional, got past UC Irvine, and then just made light work of Texas Tech, who was a respectable 8 seed overall. So I'm going to go with Stanford. I wouldn't be surprised if Vanderbilt did it, because you really only need two pitchers to win this thing, and it's got two pitchers, but I'll take Stanford, and I think the Mississippi State pick is pretty safe because the SEC is getting one team in at least, so I'll take them. It's either going to be them or Tennessee.
Now, I will say I haven't really kept up that much with the College World Series or the bracket overall, but the one game I did catch of Stanford was when they played UC Irvine, and they just they scored like 5 runs in the first inning, and then like it was just over. Yeah, like there was no chance that UC Irvine was coming back.
Yeah, they're good, man.
That being said, it's hard for me to choose against Vandy.
Yeah.
Just because of everything I've seen from them this year. I'm going to go Vandy, and I don't know about that other side. It's probably going to be Mississippi State. Unfortunately, going with the SEC championship here. And it's going to be Vandy winning it all.
Yeah, and I'll take for my overall winner, I'll take Mississippi State just as a safe pick, but I'd like to see Stanford win.
Stanford would be a fun one. It would be pretty fun to see NC State keep the magic alive as well, but I just don't see that happening in that stacked bracket they're in. But crazier things have happened in Omaha. It's a beautiful thing. I'm going to go with Vandy on that bracket as well, just because it's so hard for me to go against Leiter and Rocker. It's just, ugh. But you do, to your point earlier, Bradley, you need a little bit more than two guys. Pitching depth is the most important thing in this thing, I will say. And I'm just not sure how anybody's pitching depth is fully, but they got to be good enough to get here. So I'm going to go against the grain. I'm going to pick a little bit of the underdog on bracket two. Screw it. Give me Virginia.
Hey, there we go.
Give me Virginia. You know what? I'm going to give some ACC quote-unquote Cinderella, not a true Cinderella, but I guess comparatively to the other teams in this tournament, the ACC teams are Cinderellas. They're the lone non-16 seeds. So They're the lone non-nationally ranked seeds. So, weirdly enough, they are the technical Cinderellas here. I'll take the Wahoos to advance just because, you know what? I love their relief pitcher. I don't know if you guys saw the video, but his Dippin' Dots thing.
Oh, that was fantastic.
We can win the game.
By the way,
and then I can buy Dippin' Dots.
By the way, this would set up a repeat championship game from 2015 when Virginia beat Vanderbilt.
This is correct.
Oh, wow.
Which was...
Also, shout out to Vanderbilt for being the only team in the World Series that's not red or orange.
I knew you were going to say something about the colors.
Oh, yeah!
When you said, and shout out to Vanderbilt, I was like, he's going to do it.
Oh, yeah, I haven't even noticed that.
Well, I noticed it because in bracket two, it's Texas, Tennessee, Virginia, yep. And then Mississippi State ruins the orange thing. And then I look up in bracket one, it's Arizona, Stanford, and NC State, and Vandy ruins the red thing.
Oh, that's great. That's cool. Well, there you go. By that logic, Vanderbilt has the best chance to win.
So there you go. So I chose my World Series finals based on who's the odd man out in each bracket, obviously.
Clearly. But, it's only weird if it doesn't work out for you. But I'll take Vanderbilt over.
Exactly.
I'll take Vanderbilt over Virginia. I think that's where the magic ends. I think that's where the glass slipper falls off. But it's going to be fun. I love the College World Series. I missed it last year with a burning passion, so I'm glad it's back. So y'all go enjoy that, everybody. Watch some Omaha. But as always, that's all we've got for you. So as always, thanks to Bradley. Thanks to Josh. Thanks to Tom for the Fantasy Fifth. Thanks to the baseball people for doing the sport and giving us stuff to talk about. And thanks to you for listening and keeping us able to talk about this. We will catch you on the next episode of the Triple Play Podcast. But until then, we are out of here. It's a